Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
Zach, can you tell us about this new line of data that's popped up?
So there's actually some really cool stuff out there. It's a bunch of applications or consulting firms, services that provide climate risk analytics. And what they are best used for is to do some scenario planning. If you're a company or a federal agency, perhaps, you might want to kind of figure out what the climate trends are for, you know, assets. Hold on one sec.
Gracie, no.
Gracie, leave it. Okay. Sorry. She had found her way to destroy another rope toy. The only downside right now is there seems to be maybe a little bit of overconfidence in what these providers can provide, because our climate models weren't necessarily built for the timescales and granularity that a lot of investors and asset managers are hoping for. And a lot of these firms actually keep their methodology private because it's their way to make money. I mean, you can't just publish it and have everyone have it, but that makes it incredibly difficult to validate. And scientists have warned that if you're a company or a federal agency or a local government, that you might be best positioned to take it with a grain of salt.
I'm Anthony Adragna. This is Politico Energy. And today...
Gracie, stop. She's like chewing things like and tearing them apart. So I'm going to now give her this ridiculous looking dragon. It's like a rainbow dragon. Gracie, do that.
Zach Coleman and Gracie on the spread and potential misuse of climate models. It's Wednesday, March 17th. You just hinted at it, but who are some of the people and entities that are relying on these services?
I mean, a lot of investors are really trying to take advantage of this. You know, the types of companies that are investing in commercial real estate, pension fund managers who want to know whether there are physical risks to long-lived assets. You know, you also see local governments trying to look at it to do some scoping to see if, you know, there might be a better place to put flood defenses, things like that. But, you know, it's typically a screening tool. I mean, that's what it should be used for, at least. A lot of scientists are concerned, though, that the people who are on the buying side of these services don't really know the right questions to ask or demand a level of specificity that doesn't exist. And the question is there going to be a provider that says, yes, we can give that to you, even though they really can't?
So what are the difference between some of these methodologies or these approaches between those to be open source, like government data, scientific data? How are these companies different?
So these companies really use the backbone of government data. I mean, a lot of them use the IPCC climate scenarios and scale them down in time and in space. The real difference between what a public researcher might do and what a private company might do is a public researcher publishes it for peer review and their methods are validated. And with some of these private companies, the methodology is the moneymaker. So, you know, you're not really sure what assumptions are being made, and that could have a huge influence on the outcome of the models.
If the federal government's already been making some investments or purchasing this, some of the services from these companies, right? You found some contracts?
Yeah. I did find some contracts. And I think the important thing to keep in mind here is I don't suspect that the federal government is solely basing any decisions on the outputs of these companies. However, what a lot of people I talk to worry about is that as these governments and as these big companies that are searching for tools buy these services, these companies are getting that money and they're getting that reputational boost. So the worry is a less well-heeled company or government will, years down the line, buy those services that, you know, might not actually be up to snuff. I think that what's at stake here is if we're too prescriptive in what companies need to disclose on the physical risk side of things, that we risk getting it wrong right now because we just aren't mature enough. I think a lot of these service providers are trying to fill that void, but based on the scientists I've talked to, we just can't do that with a high degree of confidence just yet.
Also, as the White House looks for ways to protect 30% of federal lands and waters by 2030, both sides of Congress want to make sure the administration reaches out to communities, tribes, and local governments. In a letter sent to the president yesterday, Republicans said they're concerned over a lack of information about the initiative and what they say is the White House's ambiguous goal. In the letter, more than 60 GOP lawmakers said they fear the goal will be used as a method to undermine private property rights and lock up more land. But in a separate letter, more than 100 Democrats said they strongly supported the goal, but stressed that it needs to be done through a good faith conversation between tribes, states, and local agencies. One of the first executive orders of the Biden administration set the goal of protecting just under a third of federal lands and waters over the next decade, and asked for a report within the first 3 months of the administration on how to do that. That report should come in late April. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you like our show, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And listen to our other shows, Politico Dispatch, Playbook Audio Briefing, and Nerdcast. I'm Anthony Adragna. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Last year, Chevron invested billions of dollars to bring affordable, reliable, ever cleaner energy to America. Because it's only human to work toward a brighter future. Learn more at chevron.com.